Talking about the best, and, well, it looks like we're getting a lot more of the worst days of your life, inspired by a book, actually, by Dean Koontz called Life Expectancy. Really a cool book. And so I thought it'd make a good topic, the absolute worst day of your life, and, if you wish, the best day of your life as well. Otherwise, we're just sort of cruising along with open lines, which really means anything you want to talk about at all is absolutely fair game. More in a moment. Chia Pets. There was just a commercial for Chia Pets. I think I have a chia tongue. I like little things growing on it. Anyway, good evening, good morning, good afternoon, whatever it may be, wherever you are, after finding out we're carried on Armed Forces Radio, along with everything else, and for that matter, on shortwave. And, of course, the Internet. We are completely worldwide, so we're liable to hear from anybody, anywhere. Hopefully that will be you this night. Let's see where to go. Let's go to the first time caller line. That would be Pat in Redondo Beach, Cal. Hi.
Hi. How you doing, Art?
I'm all right, Pat. What's
good.
Up?
Good. How's your tongue?
Blistering.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Well, listen, I wanted to call because I have an item that I thought maybe your listeners might be interested in. It's called the Universal Language Decoder. And I mailed you an email. I know you're busy, probably didn't have time to go through all your emails, but I thought this would be something that you would definitely be interested in. And basically what it is it's a little decoder that allows you to take it and decode every language in the world.
And you mean spoken, vocal, or what?
Foreign language.
I understand. But, I mean, you speak into it and it decodes it, or
no,
what?
No, basically, it teaches you how to, for example, take a spoken foreign language and be able to understand it in your own language using a little decoder. It's just a little ABC decoder. Basically, it demonstrates that there is no such thing as a foreign language. Essentially, what it is it's like the Tower of Babel, where God disassembled the entire language and took one language and put it into separate languages. At some point in time, the language evolves back around to where it comes back together. And there is this realization that it really isn't foreign at all. For example, you could take words that didn't exist in our conversation 20 years ago, like email or internet or cyber, that we wouldn't have recognized. And these are incorporated into these languages. So at a certain point in time, the language evolves back so that you realize that the language is entirely
all right, I'm still trying to get an eye. Is this an electronic instrument?
No. Basically, what it does is you go to the website, it plays a foreign song for you, and then it decodes it and demonstrates to you that the language is universal. In other words, all of the words are in English. They're all words you can understand, but they're slightly morphed together. So it trains you how it disassembles it back for you, and trained you how to understand how it deconstructs so that you can see that it basically is all in English. So basically, when you go to this website, it says click here, and it brings up the media player and starts to play an Italian song and then shows you the printed, decoded version.
Okay, so it's basically demonstrating that, I've got it, that all language has similar roots of some sort or another. That is very interesting. I can't allow you to give the website out over the air, but that is very interesting. The main language here is Tagalog, and I'm making amazing progress in understanding the language, not so much amazing progress in speaking it. There are certain critical words that I've certainly learned and I can use. But in terms of understanding the language, I'm doing very well. And you know what's helping me the most is television. You know, I watch a lot of Philippine television. And I will, of course, ask my wife, what's this word or what's that word? And I get a lot of unsatisfactory answers, words that simply can't be translated. They are what my wife calls helping words. But nevertheless, what I found is I'm beginning to understand probably about half of what I hear. At least I would say half of what I hear. I can sort of follow along and understand what it is. But in terms of speaking it, not so good. All right, to another worst day, the fourth wildcard line in Flint, Michigan. Mel, you're on the air.
Hello, Art.
Hi.
Hey. Well, my day was basically my worst day and my best day.
All together?
All together.
Mm.
And I've got a problem. I got two people just come on my site. I got to get off.
Really?
I'm a security guard. I'll call back.
Okay. Well, you leave us hanging. I guess that happens. If you're a security guard and you've got a security problem, you definitely have got to go after waiting all that time. What a shame. Okay, well, perhaps we'll hear from him before the program ends. West of the Rockies in Sandpoint, Idaho. Hilda, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Art.
Hi.
My worst day was when I found out I had cancer.
That's bad, all right.
And it was bad, you know. But I've been doing this for 5 years. But prior to finding out that I even had cancer, I had done this novena. Your wife, I think, is Catholic, and she was...
I very well know what a novena is, yes.
Yes. So I had done this novena and prior to finding out. And anyway, after about 3 years battling this cancer, and it's 5 years now, my novena prayers were answered, or are being answered. So I'm just...
Let me guess, you're cancer-free.
No. I'm terminal. But anyway, my novena is being answered. I realize that I am going to die, you know, with receiving all the sacraments of the church, and I'll be okay. So, isn't that special?
Well, Hilda, we're all terminal.
Yeah. But anyway, that was the worst day of my life, and the best day of my life was finally understanding that my novena was being answered. And so I can go in peace.
Okay, Hilda. Well, thank you very much. I wish you the very best. We are all terminal in this life, all right? Something we probably don't want to think about very much, but we are all one way or the other terminal. Unless, of course, science comes up with some way to extend our lives. And by the way, I understand they're getting very close to that. Now, I wonder how many of you actually would want to live virtually forever? If science suddenly, in our lifetime, a distinct possibility, came up with a way to extend our lives virtually forever, would you partake of it? I am not sure that I would, although when that moment comes, well, who knows? I had a similar day. I was a member of the United States Air Force, and I had a big, the gal I was with at the time found a very large lump on my back, on my shoulder blade. And I was a medic in the Air Force, and I worked in a hospital, a surgical technician. And so I went in, you know, I knew all the doctors. We were all friends. Doctors in the Air Force are not like, they're captains, and they're not like regular officers. You know, they're not all about, I'm a captain, you're an airman first class, salute and respect me. They're not like that. Doctors, in fact, a lot of them, if you remember the movie MASH, it's kind of like that. They don't wear standard uniforms. They don't really consider themselves all that much of the armed services. They're doctors. And so this doctor and I had been friends. And I went to his office, and he said, oh, my God, that's pretty big. We're going to have to do something about that, and scheduled me for surgery. And the surgery itself was interesting. I was on the operating table, not as he had predicted for me. He said, well, you know, just lie down, give you a little local, and we'll pop that sucker out. Well, it didn't quite work out that way. I was on the operating table, I think, 5 hours, and there were 5 or 6 doctors by the time it was all done. I was actually awake during the whole process. They got deep down in my chest where I could feel them going clip, 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 clip. I could actually feel the cuts. They couldn't give me a general anesthetic after they had begun, they said. And at any rate, they took out this, what turned out to be a benign tumor, thank you very much. But they sent it to Lackland Air Force Base. I was at Amarillo at the time. And they sent it to Lackland, and the report came back. Doctor took me to his office, sat me down, and said, you've got about 6 months. That was a bad day. Not the worst, mind you, but a very, very bad day. And then he watched my reaction and then began laughing. Started laughing so hard he damn near fell on the floor and said, no, you're fine. It's benign. But my entire day was, as you can imagine, ruined. There's nothing like getting the message that you've got about 6 months. Yikes. All right, let's go to the first-time caller line. That would be Tim in Kansas someplace or another. Hi, Tim.
How's it going?
It's going fine.
Yeah, I heard about your bad day. That is a pretty bad day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my best day happened about 10 years ago. And believe it or not, it's the first time I ever saw and talked to a ghost.
You consider having a ghost talk to you a good day, okay?
Yeah, who doesn't? Well, I was working down southern Texas, a little all-night gas station. And a guy pulled up in an old 50-style Cadillac. That's a nice car. And I was talking to him. And he thought he looked really familiar. And I finally came to me who it was, and I said, if you who I think you are, aren't you supposed to be dead? And he said, boy, don't remember, don't believe everything you hear.
Mm-hmm.
And when he pulled away, I called my friend and told him who it was, and he didn't believe me either.
So you had, in fact, been talking to a ghost. Who was this person, a friend or what?
Well, not really a friend. I didn't really know him, but I knew of him. Remember the old musical group, The Doors?
Of course.
It was Jim Morrison.
Who's Jim Morrison?
Lead singer of The Doors.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Suppose he was killed in France.
You're sure it was Jim Morrison? I've been to his gravesite outside Paris, in the suburbs
I'm
of
sure
Paris.
It was.
Okay, well, that's I guess, a good one. If you get to see somebody like that, Jim Morrison. Of course, how can you really be sure? How can you really be sure? I mean, did he stop? Did he tell you that he really was Jim Morrison? Produce ID showing he was Jim Morrison? Sing you a little song or what? Okay, let's go to my home state, Nevada. And I think her name is Array?
Array Al.
Okay, welcome.
Thank you. All right, this is about my best and worst day, all within the same 24-hour period.
You too.
Anyway, I was moving from Vegas to Phoenix, and I decided to take the scenic route 66, and decided to stop in Flag, fill up my gas tank, and then go down South 86. Anyway, I was in an Oldsmobile, which is 98. They're pretty big cars.
Oh, yeah.
And I had my back trunk full of stuff. Anyway, I'm going down the hill. And for some reason, I'm picking up speed, and I just, like, why am I picking up speed? I'm tapping on my brakes. I'm not really slowing down. And then this voice says, you have to slow down. Put your hands on the steering wheel and put your feet on the brakes and slow down. It didn't help, not at all. But I started going down the hill faster. I'm getting really, really scared. And then the voice...
Your brakes were having no effect at all?
None. You'll hear why in a little bit.
Okay.
So anyway, I'm picking up speed, and I'm like, oh, my God, what is going on? And then this voice says, put your foot on the brake, grab the steering wheel and turn sharply to the right. And I'm thinking, I don't think I can do that. This car is going too fast. But I tried it, and it didn't work. And by then, I'm going now even faster, and I don't have hardly any control. And the voice says this, you got one more time. No, really, it says it. The voice says, you got one more time. And so I took all the strength that I had, put both my hands on the steering wheel as hard as I could, put my foot on the brakes, and just swung it sharply to the right. I fishtailed into this small sandy hill. The back of my car, this long boat of a car, hit the side. Dust was everywhere. It was surrealistic. You know, all this dust was everywhere. And I guess I got a little dazed. So I looked up. I had been leaning on the steering wheel. Big semi truck was behind me. The guy parked, jumps out, says, are you okay, lady? I'm like, oh, no. I just remembered I filled the tank up with gas. So I go to jump out, and I'm dizzy. He says, oh, whoa. Take it easy. This other guy coming from the opposite direction is a small pickup. Well, not pickup, but one of those tow trucks. But, you know, it's a small one. He pulls over and stops, and he comes over. And he says, well, they don't make cars like this anymore. You don't have anything wrong. He said, oh, I take that back. They said, lady, are you okay? We want you to come and see this. I go to the back that they're telling me. My rear tires are spinning air. So anyway, the tow truck driver says, we're going to get you out. And my truck was pretty much as big as his tow truck. And I didn't think he would do it. But they managed to get me off and back up on the road. And the truck driver, who was really nice, I never got his name or anything. He says, don't worry, lady. I'm going to follow you all the way down. You know, we get to Sedona. I got to go in my direction. But I'm going to make sure that you get out okay. So anyway, we start off. And then he flags me to stop. So I stop. He says, stop the car. I want you to see this. So the tow truck driver had been directing the traffic, so everybody was going around us. So I park the car, and I get out. All behind me, you could see where I had tried to stop. He says, there's your problem. You went through this oil thing where they had been doing construction on the highway and flag.
Right.
And I went through it, and because my tires were kind of worn, I had no tread, and it was just oil. Anyway.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so we went past that little sandy hill. On the other side was a sheer drop of at least 200 feet. There was no.
Well, you must have had a little angel on your shoulder telling you what to do.
I agree, but listen to this part. So I finally get to Sedona. I'm really excited because I'm in Eckankar, and they have, at that time, this beautiful place that this lady had donated to the church. And my friends said, you've got to see it. It's beautiful. The views are great. Go to the library. So I'm going. I had already called when I got to Sedona. I said, I'm coming up. And the guy's the caretaker. He says, okay, just coming up. So I'm going up. And he's coming down, and he meets me. He says, I had to leave, but I left the library door open so you could go in.
Very little time left, dear. Very little time.
Okay. Anyway, I park. And I try to go to the library. It's locked. And I'm like, oh, God, how great a day is this? And then I'm saying, go and look at the view. It was beautiful. Green, little silvery water, which is, you know, Oak Creek. And I step down to the ledge, and I step down further. And this white dog follows me. It's a beautiful dog. Anyway, I see a beautiful crystal city. I mean, it's just flaming there, just beautiful and serene and just gorgeous. Anyway, before I know what's going on, I wake up. It's totally dark. I can't see how to get back up. And this guy dog stirs, and I follow her out, and I'm able to go.
Okay, we're out of time. I've got to stop it right there. You imagine, I've always had that fear of, like, hitting my brakes, going down a steep, you know, like a 10 or 11% grade in a big vehicle, and having it go right to the floorboard, no braking at all. Indeed, here I am. Hi, everybody. We're doing the best and worst days of your life, inspired by a book called Life Expectancy by Dean Koontz. Indeed, if you have only a worst day of your life, that's just fine, because really that's what the book was all about. I thought, you know, in the spirit of Christmas, I would add the best days as well. Now, while my tongue is peeling away here, I see somebody who has some help possibly for me on the tongue situation. So if what I'm saying doesn't sound quite right, it's you'd be surprised how much you actually need your tongue to be articulate, to correctly form words and all the rest of it. Amazing. We will be right back. All right, back to it we go. Back to it we go. This is a nurse. How timely is that? I think it is Kathy in Ferndale, California. Hi, Kathy.
Hello, Art.
Yes.
I have you on my speaker, so I have to make sure what's with the... Okay, let me take you off speakerphone. Well, I'll tell you, you and I go way, way back, and it's the first time I could ever call you on a first aid call, triage you, but I'm really concerned, and I'm very concerned. Did you read the little email that I sent you?
Not yet, I guess.
Okay, this is what I'd advise. Now, if you're still in the desert and you have any aloe plants inside or outside the house, and you can take a clipping off the end of it if you already don't have some in the house.
Did you say if I'm still in the desert?
Oh, yeah. Where are you? Are you in the Philippines or somewhere?
Yes.
Well, they'll have it down there. They should have an aloe plant very similar to ours up here. But there's several cactus with the same kind of lipopolysaccharides or whatever they are inside there. But if you can talk to somebody that has any knowledge of the plants close by there, or if you have an aloe plant or can get into a store, I don't know what time it is, where they'll have aloe vera juice, any kind of aloe, pure aloe product without alcohol, without any preservatives, you need to get that in your mouth. You need to rinse with it in your mouth and then take a stone, clean it really well, cool it off in the refrigerator, and especially if you have a round, small crystal, and that will take the heat right out of your mouth, and then you dip it in cool water again and just keep that process, and it'll take all the heat out. But the worst thing I'm concerned about is that you've got these blisters and your skin is coming off. And if I had more, if I was a braver person and knew more about what I was doing, I'd say, let me take over and host your show tonight. But the only thing I could talk about would be your show about last night, because you've had so many other people investigating the Mayans, and so many for over the years I've gone back. At least 12, 13 years with you, it seems, before Madman Markham and all those people. And
it's been a long time, that's for sure. Well,
yeah.
All of those suggestions are worthy, but I am here by myself. My wife flew her family up from Mindanao, and so they're out at the Manila Zoo right now, and I'm here all by myself. So, little blisters. Weird little blisters are forming, and little pieces are coming off my tongue. Wonderful, just wonderful. I appreciate the advice, and I know aloe is good, but I'm afraid it's going to have to wait. All right, let's go to Wildcard Line. Linda in California, you're on the air, Linda.
Hi, Art. What
Hi.
A pleasure to speak with you. This is such a treat. It's funny, you just had a nurse. I was going to tell you to put some cold ice water in your mouth. I usually put ice on a burn.
That sounds good, again, I'm doing a radio program.
I know. Well, anyway, the reason I'm calling is I want to tell you about the worst day of my life, and then I have the best day of my life.
Okay.
The worst day of my life was when my husband committed suicide.
Oh, that's bad.
Yeah. We were married 7 years and one day. I found him in the car in the garage, carbon monoxide poisoning. He went to Vietnam. He never smoked a cigarette. He was as straight as could be. And he came back a full-fledged heroin addict. And I guess he didn't, back in the 70s, you just didn't know what to do. And I didn't even know he was on it. And
That's remarkable. You really should have noted changes, although this may be immediately when he came back. So I guess you would just think it was part of the changed person.
Yes, that's what I thought it was. That's what I thought. But it was very sad. A certain kind of depression came over me, lasted for about 8 years, where everything just turned dark, like my whole soul was dark. Now, I want to tell you about the best day of my life.
Okay.
I was a child performer at 12 years old. My first job was with Jerry Lewis. I started at the Sands Hotel in Las Vegas, recorded for RCA Victor.
Wow.
I was a child performer. I had extremely possessive and parents that were, they were stage parents. And after Jeffrey killed himself, they wanted me to go back to sing. I got married to get out of the house was one of the things. But after that, my father would say she's lost her soul and all of these things and say, you're absolutely nuts. They wanted me to go back and sing. And I couldn't do anything like that. I could hardly get up.
Right.
And he said, you'll never be anything unless you sing. Okay. Well, this lasted for quite a while, even as a young child. So emotionally abusive he was. Anyway, I was working for him in his store, and I drove to work one day, and every day in front of everybody, he would put me down. I obviously had lost my sense of self because of all the, I don't know, the bad things they would say to me. Anyway, I went to work. My father again started telling me terrible things, embarrassing me in front of everyone. And all right at that point, I said, this is it. I said, I quit, and I said everything I wanted to say to him that I needed to say, that I did deserve and I was good, and I walked out of the store. I drove home. I came home so angry, and I was breaking dishes, but I was telling myself all the good things. I love you. Nobody's going to ever treat you like this. I mean, I broke my whole set of dishes. But then, about a half hour later, a feeling came over my body. It was like a heat, like an energy that started through my whole body, especially through my heart. It came out. It was like warm and wonderful, and it lasted for about 3 days, and people were drawn to me, children. And I'm telling you, I have looked for this feeling, and it went away just the way it came, but it lasted for 3 days.
Well, that's odd. It's perhaps very much like the other caller, the caller who called a little while ago. Our brains, in response to some great trauma, and certainly what you described would be great trauma. My God, you know, what our parents tell us? Parents need to be more sensitive. The things that our fathers and our mothers tell us when we're young, to a large degree, shape who we are for the rest of our lives. Now, my father, of course, you know, I'm older. I'm 61 years old now. And when I was young, I chose, instead of finishing college right away, to go into the Air Force. And my dad, God rest his soul, he's gone now, told me that I would never be anything, that I had to go to college. These were days when if you did not go to college, you were considered to have virtually no future in your life. You would be nothing. And he absolutely told me that all the time. And I think that is what in part drove me to succeed in the business that I chose to go into. Now, going into radio is a big gamble, It's not a small gamble. It's a giant gamble. And the majority of people in the radio business end up starving to death. Trust me. Or just barely making ends meet and traveling from radio station to radio station, state to state. It's a very gypsy-like existence. And indeed, I was doing that for, well, many, many, many years. Now, my father did live long enough to see me succeed in a pretty big way, and I think it surprised him. And the things our parents say to us stay with us all our lives. I recall my dad telling me that, and he was a very successful man after the Marine Corps. He became vice president of Blue Cross Blue Shield, you know, that big insurance company. And I recall his saying, and we'll never forget, Trey, that was my nickname. Trey, you know, I paid more tax this year than you made all year. In fact, it was two or three times as much as I had made in that year. And that made me feel terribly small. And it just drove me and drove me and drove me. And so perhaps in a kind of a strange way, it was a good thing because it did drive me so hard. And then I can recall something I should not have done and still kind of feel sorry about later in life. There was a year when I said to my dad, "Hey, Dad, look, I paid more tax than you made last year," which was a pretty ugly thing to say. But the things we say to our children resonate and stay with us all our lives. Remember that. If you're a parent, be very, very careful what you say to your child because it will shape, perhaps drive them or hurt them psychologically. So be very, very careful if you're a parent. Wildcard Line, Jay in Los Angeles. You're on the air.
Hi there, Art. How you doing?
I'm okay, sir.
So the worst day of my life was I was driving home in one of those El Nino storms in Los Angeles.
Yes.
And I was stopped at a light and it turned green. And out of nowhere, a guy ran in front of my car and I ran over him.
Oh, my God.
And of course, you know, I stopped. I called 911. The ambulances and the police came and everything. And they took him. They took him to the hospital, and he died a few days later.
What happened? Did he just run in front of your car? Was your attention diverted, or what happened?
Well, apparently, based on the police report, the witnesses, and everything. He had gotten off a bus and didn't want to wait because it was raining. So he decided just to run across the street against the light.
I see.
And so, of course, you know, it's the fact that, you know, I figured he probably wasn't going to live. And then I'm also, you know, thinking, you know, what's going to happen to me? Am I going to be charged?
Sure.
Luckily, you know, it wasn't my fault. And if the police report said if he had lived, he would have been charged with jaywalking. But still, you know, it's the gravity of it, taking the life of someone, you know, you had no malice towards, you didn't even know they were there.
No, of course. It will be with you, and I'm sure you already know that all your life. That's the kind of thing that you never, ever forget.
Yeah.
So have you come to terms with it finally?
Yeah, it's interesting because obviously I told family and close friends, and not long after that, it actually happened to a relative of mine, same sort of situation. Mm-hmm. And it's funny in terms of, you know, dealing with it with the insurance company and lawyers and things, and they say, oh yeah, well, you know, that happened to my uncle, or it's not an unusual occurrence, but you know, you still
no, of course it's not. Yeah, it's not an unusual occurrence. But oh yes, if you take a life, no matter the circumstance, that will be with you for the rest of your life. Thankfully, that is one thing that has never occurred to me, and I don't ever want it to. It would just be on your conscience, and it would be on your mind forever. So I can easily imagine that would be the worst day of your life. First time caller line, Mike in Idaho. You're on the air.
Hey Art, how you doing?
I'm all right.
It's a pleasure to speak with you after so long listening to you. And before I get to my subject, I wanted to talk about my days back in the Air Force. I was in the Air Force probably a little bit after you. I just heard you say you were 61. I'm 56, so we're pretty close in age.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to say one thing because I was listening to you talk about radio and how you really love radio. And I know you're a ham operator and you really get into that sort of thing. And I just wanted to say that back when I was stationed in Alaska in 1971, and they had the big earthquake in Sylmar in 71, mm-hmm. and that's where I was born and raised, and my whole family was there. And I couldn't get a hold of anybody by phone. But we did have a ham operator on the base, and he got through to some people close by. And they told me, don't worry, it's not as bad as the news is saying. You know, your family's probably okay. But the ham operators were so cool to help me get through to my family. It was just amazing to me. And I wanted to throw that at you and let you know that some of us who aren't that into ham radios, we appreciate the service that some of you people provide sometimes.
Boy, is that ever wonderful for you to say, Mike. Thank you very much. Listen, I want to say this again. There have been some very big changes in ham radio in just the last couple of weeks, literally. The CW or Morse code requirement has been dropped to the dismay of many and the pleasure of others. So you no longer have to take a code test to become a ham operator, though you still have to take a technical test. In addition to that, the phone bands, or the voice bands, as it were, have been expanded, giving us more room. Now, that said, the internet has surely hurt ham radio. However, don't let that affect your desire to move into the hobby, because in all the world, there is nothing like ham radio. It is the most amazing, magical hobby you can imagine in the world. It's not carried on wires. It's not a phone system. The signal that you send out on the HF bands is reflected by the ionosphere many times all the way around the world. And there is still a distinct magic associated with sending a signal that travels through the air virtually around the world, never knowing who you're going to talk to. And I can assure you of this, kind of echoing what he said, that when the very worst happens, typhoons, hurricanes, the natural disasters that inevitably occur again and again, ham radio will get through when nothing else will. When the internet has gone down, and oh, it goes down, all right, and cell phones no longer work, and telephone lines no longer work, and all other means of communication are absolutely gone or ineffective, amateur radio or ham radio will continue to be the mode that gets the word out, that saves lives. So the hobby end of it aside, don't let the modern day internet and all that's going on dissuade you from looking into ham radio. Ham radio is what led me into broadcasting. Ham radio, I have to thank for many of the jobs that I got. It is a fraternity that is unlike many others in the world. It's just an amazing hobby, so feel free. East of the Rockies, you are on the air. Terry from Ohio. Hello, Terry from Ohio.
Hi, can you hear me?
I hear you now. Yes, somebody didn't turn up a pot. Yes, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. First note I wanted to say was about your cats. I think that's really cool how they're so close. I've got two myself that are really close in age, and they're the same way. If one leaves the room, the other one cries for the other one.
Oh, it's something.
It is. It's adorable. But this is about my best and worst day. They were both together.
So many like that. Okay.
I worked third shift, and I got home from work on Friday night. Well, I guess it would have been Saturday morning, and went to bed and had the weirdest dream that my ex, I considered my soulmate. We were working on getting back together at the time, and I knew that he had cancer.
Hold your story right there. We've got a break coming up, so I'm going to hold you through the break, hon, all right?
Okay.
Okay, stay right where you are. From all Manila in the Philippines, during Christmas, which is really quite an affair here, I'm Art Bell.